Hello, everybody. This is L. Ron Ferguson here, and you're watching Cal Banyan's Hypnosis, Etc. Obviously, I'm not Cal Banyan, but I'm sitting in because today I have a very special guest. We are doing part two in the series of how to make appointments with your clients. Okay, how to be a successful hypnotherapist. I don't know what the title is going to be on this because we haven't decided that yet, but basically, we're going to cover a lot of really good stuff. If you're watching this anywhere but calbanyan.com, you want to check out right below because we have, you want to go there and look below because we have a lot of special links, texts, and other goodies that are going to enhance this viewing presentation. All right, let me tell you about my special guest, Maureen Banyan. Maureen is the reason that the Banyan Hypnosis Center is a center at all in the first place. If it wasn't for her, probably would have missed out on about $6 million worth of business. She knows how to sell, how to run a business successfully, and taught me just about everything I know about how to close clients and make money and keep my hypnosis practice running over the phone with clients in person, and just really set me up for success. If I ever have any questions, she's always right there for me. And since we talk all the time, we thought, well, why should it all get lost in the ethers over there in that office? So we're going to share it with you guys for free. How you doing, Maureen?
Doing just wonderful, L. Ron.
Good. We're going to continue where we left off. This is part two in the series. We were just talking about the initial setup with talking to clients, building rapport, those sorts of things. Now we're kind of segueing into issues on some objections that clients come up with, and also just some more weird questions that they start to ask. And we touched on this in the last episode, but what I wanted to draw attention to is the client that calls and wants to set up an appointment for their kid or their husband or their wife or stuff like that. They're setting up an appointment for somebody else. How do you like to handle that, and what are some of the important questions that you like to ask to handle that situation?
Okay, one of the questions I always ask is, do they want to come in? Are they interested in hypnosis? Is this their idea or is this your idea? And, you know, sometimes, every once in a while, it'd be somebody says, well, my husband just has a very busy schedule and he just doesn't have the time to call from work and I'm doing it for him, you know, all that kind of stuff. And so, unless it's a child that's under 18 years old, I will insist that in order for me to make the appointments, I really need to speak to them and make the appointments. Because we have found in the past that, you know, if the client themselves don't make the appointments, what we really don't know for sure if this is what that person wants to do or is somebody else wishing them that they'll do it. And so they'll be kind of being dragged in kicking. And so, you know, your sessions may not be as successful and it may not go smoothly. So rather than to go through all that, it's best we start off with the appointments. If they can take the time to make the phone call and make those appointments, and you get a chance to talk to them. I really like to talk to them to find out exactly what's going on how they feel. And once I've determined that helps me more, and then I'll go ahead and make the appointments. Now, if they don't call, then no appointments are made. That's the best way to handle it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that just drives home the point of whether or not they really want to be the one doing it, right? Like, some people want to make an appointment for their wife to get better, but the wife could really care less, or the husband, for that matter.
That's correct. Right?
They just, you know, once again, this is part of the qualification weeding out process, right? You don't want somebody in your office who is coming in for somebody else. Okay, if they're not there for their own motivation, then once again, it's only going to hurt your practice instead of help it, right?
That's true.
No, they don't want it to work. It ain't going to work. How about with, more specifically, with children? I mean, asking, what are some of the questions you like to ask them to really dig into that to make sure that they're not sending their kids in kicking and screaming or something like that? What do you like to ask?
Well, whenever people call about their children, one of the most important things is to find out how old the child is. If they are under, you know, 5-6 years old, you might want to consider. And many a times when we have people calling for their child that is, I'll say, under 9-10 years old, I'll ask them how mature is that child. Because you could have a 10-year-old going on 4, and you could have a 6-year-old going on 12. And it, you know, in order for our kind of hypnosis, we really need a certain level of maturity in the child, because they would need to follow instructions. And if they can't follow instructions, then you really don't have you don't have an opportunity to really work with them. You know, it's not going to be an easy session. And so it's really important to find out all these specifics. And sometimes, you know, when they say, well, they're 8, 9, but they're very mature, blah, 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 then it's a good time that, you know, and the only time we'll say, you know, how about I set up a free consultation? You bring your son or your daughter in, and we'll have him meet with a hypnotherapist. And then the hypnotherapist will then determine if they can work with your child. And I think that would be a good way to go. But on a, you know, generally we just don't offer free consultations. The consultation we do on the phone is pretty in depth, that we really don't need a free consultation. But in this case, I usually, you know, if the child is young, this is what I would suggest doing, is just offer a free consult, and you know, tell them that it's possible. If I find that the hypnotherapist says that they can work with the child, they might want to go right into session right away. Mm-hmm. So that would be a good way of doing that too.
Right, exactly. Yeah, just to set it up so you can do that. I mean, I wanted to draw attention to that too. What you said about giving free consultations over the phone versus in the office. Like, a lot of people, they want to come in and meet you. But depending on how your business is set up, you just not, might not be able to do that in your office. I mean, maybe you only, you lease or rent your office from somebody else a few days a week. Maybe you only have a partial office. I mean, here, we only deal with people on the phone, right?
That's very correct. You know, there really isn't any need. We answer all their questions on the phone. We tell them all about what we do, you know, and they can see the photo of the therapist on our website. So other than being able to touch you, that's about the only thing that's missing.
Right, really. I mean, if we can build rapport over the phone, mm-hmm. then we definitely have it, right?
That's correct.
I mean, one of the only reasons that you would meet somebody in person is to build greater rapport, but that's usually if they're really a shopper, like if they're really, really shopping around, they're going to want to try to meet you, don't you think?
Sometimes. But you know what? If you can build a good rapport over the phone and give them as much information and be as sincere as possible, people are very comfortable with that. And it's just that, you know, I hear a lot of stories from people who call, where they've called other hypnotists in the area, and they talk about their frustrations with these people, where all they're concerned about is booking that appointment. They couldn't care less what this person had to say about their issues or whatsoever. The key to really building rapport with people is listening, being, you know, being sympathetic to their issues, and listening very intensely or attentively as to what their issue is.
Exactly. I mean, when they feel validated,
that's right,
they're going to be a lot closer to you, a lot more likely to book with you, and of course, be successful in the long run, right?
Right.
Now, so if they are shopping around and they tell you that and they say, well, you know, I'm just going to make a few more calls, shopping around, what do you like to say?
Well, that's a very good idea. If you want to shopping around, I'll tell them that's a very good idea to be shopping around, because you want to find a hypnotist that's the best fit for you. Now, let me suggest to you the kinds of questions to ask. If I was the first one you asked, then the next person you call, find out what kind of hypnosis do they do. Do they do direct suggestions only, or do they do age regression? And, you know, because most people, the issues are pretty deep-seated. And so I suggest that, you know, look for someone that does age regression, because then you can get to the root of the issue. And also, remember, the cheapest isn't the best. The most expensive isn't the best also. You call around and you find the best fit for you, because you will know when you call and talk to the right person, and you'll feel comfortable.
That's a great point to make. I mean, that almost answers the question, if they call up and they say, you know, you give them the price, you build value, tell them what they do, and they say, geez, that's really expensive. What do you like to say?
You know, I'll say, I'm not sure what you're comparing this to, but what have you done to take care of this issue? And if you don't do this, what are you considering doing? And what's that going to cost you in the long run?
That's great. I'm writing that down right now. Exactly. Which is just one more way to qualify them, right?
Uh-huh.
Because when people call up, what are some of the things, you know, while we're building rapport, we also like to say, well, what have you done to address this issue already?
Mm-hmm.
And if they've done nothing in the past, that's kind of a little red flag right there that they might not be ready. If they say, oh, well, I've tried this, I've tried that, I've tried medication, I went to this diet plan and that diet plan, then automatically, if they've tried a whole lot of stuff and you know how much it's been costing, you know right away that, the price objection, if they give it to you later, does not work. That is just a knee-jerk response because they don't know what else to say, which is a point that I wanted to make. I mean, sometimes people will object about the price, but it's really because of another reason altogether, because there's only three reasons people don't buy. It's either because A, they don't need you, B, they can't afford you, or C, they don't believe you. Okay, and when you find out that they've been doing a whole lot of other things, you know that they can afford you. Okay, so that's not the question. Even if they answer with that objection, you know that it's because they either don't think they need you, they're not convinced yet, or you haven't built the value properly, or that you haven't positioned your services to fulfill the need of their issue properly, or that they simply just don't believe you, which means that there's something wrong in the way that you're approaching it or communicating to them. There's just a kind of a problem there, wouldn't you say?
Yes, yes, you've got some really good points too. And then at the same time, you know, it could be they're just not ready to make any appointments, period. You know, they're just maybe just price searching.
Yeah.
For a later period. And like I mentioned before, if you can get them to tell you the story, talk about their problems, and dump all their story about themselves to you, that's a good way to bond with that person, because they only want to do it one time. They don't want to call every place and then have to tell the whole same story over and over again. And so they'll remember who they spoke to. And I always get people say, oh, thank you so much for listening to me, because last few places I called, they just only wanted the appointment and then they hung up on me, or, you know, that kind of thing. So you have to have some compassion, have to be sincere that you really want to help this person. And it is not about the money, because sure, if they can afford to come into you, then wonderful. But if they can't afford it, I tell you what, we've had people that would save their money for a year to come in to see us.
And it's worth every penny, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
Now, what if they're calling and they start to be really vague about the issue? They say, well, you know, I just tell me what you do. Or, well, I just got this issue. Can you, I don't know, I'm having, you know, bad feelings. Can you help me? What do you like to, how do you like to handle that?
Well, I just tell them that, you know what, I can't, you know, we can't help you unless I know what you want us to help you with. If you, is it because it's private, it's too personal, you feel you can't tell me? Or is it, you know, it's a sexual issue? And if it's a sexual issue, I tell you, we do this all the time. So nothing you tell me is going to be new to our ears. And we can certainly help you, but you have to be able to be candid with me. Then I can tell you for sure if we can help you or we can't. You know, so basically your hands are kind of tied if they don't tell you the truth.
Right, exactly. I mean, once again, that goes back to qualifying them correctly and weeding out people. I mean, if they can't be open with you enough right there, what's it going to be like when they get in your office? You know, once again, we have to have the type of client that's going to be involved enough and not just, hey, well, I just want you to hypnotize me and do it for me, right? It's a dance, right?
That's for sure. Yeah, you know, if they can't follow instructions, you know, even on the phone, then you're not going to be able to have a successful session with that person.
Right, exactly. Now, so let's say you're talking to them or you're talking to their husband or something like that, and you're suspecting that they're mentally ill or that they could be bringing in a mentally ill person. How do you like to handle that?
Well, if you suspect or you're even suspicious at all, I usually say, you know, has this person been diagnosed with a mental illness? And if so, then you need to check with his psychiatrist or psychologist, whoever is taking care of him, to see if they can do, you know, work with us with hypnosis and get a doctor's referral. And if they say, you know, no, this person has not been diagnosed, has not been under doctor's care, in some cases, I'll bring this up to Cal Banyan, who has a background in psychology and, you know, a graduate degree in psychology, and his background, he can maybe deal with some of these people. So, you know, it just depends. But if you, you know, if you don't have that kind of training, it's best that you don't, you know, work with them.
Yeah, I mean, if it's out of your scope of practice, it's only going to hurt you once again in the long run, because once again, you're going to be selling somebody something they don't need, right? And if you're selling ice to an Eskimo, you're not going to be in business very long, right?
Right, right. Well, exactly. And, you know, and every hypnotist has to be really honest with themselves. You know, all hypnotists out there should be honest with yourself. What is your skill level? What are you able to work with and can't work with? And if it's above what you can do, then refer out. Be a man and just man up and say, basically, you know, this is out of my scope, and refer out. There's nothing wrong with it. They're going to respect you in the long run.
Exactly. And it's like you were saying, if you can have an alliance with a professional, and, you know, it's somebody who may be diagnosed with severe depression or something like that, and they're carrying an official diagnosis, if you can, like you said, get a doctor referral, it can help you build a professional alliance that's also only going to help you build the practice in the long run. And once again, refusing it if they don't get that referral, but if they do, it can only be something good, right?
That's right.
Okay, now how about this? Let's say that they're calling and they're talking about OCD or phobias and stuff like that, and you suspect that they've been self-diagnosing. That is, they're not carrying a real diagnosis. What do you like to do with that?
First question I ask is, have you been diagnosed by a doctor? Or is this something that you came up with? And if they say, oh, no, this is, I read about this and I figured that's what I have, then I'd go ahead and book them. But if they say, oh, no, my doctor, you know, I've been diagnosed with that, then you just tell them that, okay, then what I like to do is get a referral from your doctor so that we can work with you. We certainly don't want to interfere with any regimen that your doctor is doing with you.
Exactly. And I think that touches on another point that we always want to be careful with, too, is when a client is calling up for pain or pain control, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they say, oh, listen, I've been chronic pain or whatever. Somebody suggested that hypnosis is going to work, but, you know, are you going to cure me? Are you going to take my pain away? How do you like to handle the pain client?
Well, I'll tell you, one of the things is you cannot believe everything they tell you, because some people are desperate and they will lie. And if they tell you that, oh, yeah, the doctor says there's nothing wrong with them, but then they have pain, they have this and that, you know, I will still insist on getting a doctor's referral anytime with pain, because hypnosis can mask pain. And we certainly don't want to be responsible for something that could be seriously wrong with that person, because people who are in pain are desperate, and they will lie to you. So don't believe everything they tell you.
Yeah, I think that just goes back to the point of the classic fear that they're going to come in for migraines, you're going to help them with headaches or some sort of issue like that, help them mask the pain, but it's going to be a brain tumor or something like that. You know, it's always a concern that we want to help them mask their pain and learn these techniques and remove the cause of the pain, but if it is an actual physical problem, they can still get it taken care of, right?
That's right. That's right. That's something, you know, all hypnotists should be very conscious of, that this is the kind of stuff that could happen. It can come across real simple when they call you on the phone and you think, oh, yeah, I can help you alleviate that pain and everything. But sometimes it's dangerous. And so it's better not to fool with that. You know, it'd be better to be safe than sorry.
Exactly. Now, how about this? If they start to talk and say, well, you know what, I was talking to this other hypnotherapist and they're a doctor, they're a PhD or something like that, what do you like to say to that?
Well, you know, it's great they have a PhD or they're a doctor, but let me tell you, most doctors and PhD do not learn hypnosis in grad school or medical school. You're better off going to a professional hypnotist who's had probably more training than your doctor or psychologist.
because they probably would have had more hours in training than the little bit of training that your doctor or your psychologist received maybe in a weekend workshop. So, you know, they need to do a little bit more checking and find out really how much hypnosis does the doctor or psychologist do. Do they just dabble in it part-time or do they do it full-time?
Exactly. I mean, it's just amazing how many doctors and stuff like that, or even psychologists, really have a weekend certification in hypnosis, okay? Or they've even been to hypnosis school, and they've only learned direct suggestion or very amateur techniques, right?
Right.
I mean, it's just amazing what's out there as far as techniques or as far as just, you know, stuff that you can read out a book, put into practice, and then call yourself a hypnotherapist, but it doesn't make you actually any good at what you do as far as creating long-term permanent results, right?
Right, exactly. And then there's a percentage of population out there who are extremely impressed with credentials, and there's nothing you can do to change these people's mind because they're still going to go to the doctor or psychologist because of their credentials. And, you know, basically, don't even waste your breath trying to convince these people that you're better.
Yeah, it's just not going to work.
No.
I mean, I had a client come in once, and she wanted to see my credentials on the wall. She goes, "Where are your credentials? I want to see them." And my response to that was, okay, listen, you're already here. You're in the office, okay? I mean, yeah, my credentials are over there on the wall, but you're here. Do you want to do this or not?
Mm-hmm.
We've built the rapport, everything else like that. Some people will hold off on that until the last minute, which is just another reason to get to know your clients really, really well. Find out all those little hidden objections before they book rather than after, right?
That's
like we've
right.
been talking about, that weeding out process.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
All right. Anything you want to share off the top of your head before I wrap it up?
Really not at the moment. You know, it's just been, I'm so glad that we get to cover this subject because, you know, most hypnotists that are out there don't realize that telephone is going to make or break you. And if you don't master these telephone answering skills, you're not going to be able to stay in business or build your business. And, you know, and I always tell people, basically, your relationship with that client begins with that phone call, not when they walk in that door to meet you. It's already there. Because I tell you, most of the people that I talk to on the phone that I book, when they come in for the very first time and I greet them, and they'll say, "Oh, God, I already feel I know you. You know, like we're old friends." And so they're already very comfortable by the time they come into the office. So that's the kind of rapport you want to build with the potential client. And it's really important because we've got too many hypnotists out there who are complaining that they're not making it, they're having a hard time building their business or staying in business. So this is really important information on how to answer that phone.
Absolutely. And it's amazing how many hypnotherapists just aren't good at that stuff. I mean, and that's no problem because we got all the information right here. I mean, you can be great in the office, great one-on-one, but on the phone or in sales or in presenting yourself, sometimes you need a little room for improvement right there, and that's what we're here for. All right, good. So if you want to learn more, check out the last episode. Stay tuned for our next episode. It's going to be the best one yet. If you want to know more about how to do 5-path, how to learn 7th-path self-hypnosis, become an instructor for that sort of thing, become a 5-path practitioner, learn hypnotherapeutic techniques that are going to take your practice to the next level, check out hypnosiscenter.com. Look at hypnosis.org to look at even more products, training schedules, and pick up some tips, tricks, and techniques by looking at some of these last podcasts. Thanks for watching. I'll see you next episode. This is L. Ron Ferguson, signing off.
This recording is the property of Cal Banyan and Cal Banyan's Banyan Publishing Incorporated. All rights reserved, for private use only, may not be duplicated without written permission.